I'm ready for war again. Wig and all, wearing my green sweater. And your mic's muted.
I was just saying, it weirdly works.
Cool. Welcome to Close Up, everybody. Hello, interwebs. We're doing another House of the Dragon episode today for season two. Full spoilers ahead. If you didn't watch our last House of the Dragon episode a year ago, you should. It's probably still one of my favorite ones, where Ryan and I just fought for an hour about the show's inner politics. We weren't even fighting about whether the show was good, because it just was. It was more about the political discussions. Let's see if today can replicate the same fervor and fury. Maybe for a different reason. We'll see. So, medium shot here. What was your anticipation coming into season two?
Well, I've been watching Game of Thrones since, I believe, season three came out around that time. So, watched that series multiple times. Watched House of Dragon when it first happened, obviously, with first premiered. So my anticipation for the show was pretty up there, or for the second season, I should say. So I was pretty hyped throughout the entirety of the last, 16 months since the end of the first season? So,
you're right.
Yeah, I've been pretty hyped about the second season.
I still have never seen a single episode of Game of Thrones, come at me, but House of the Dragon was my first foray into the world of Westeros, and I was thoroughly impressed with it. It was still a very good introduction to this world, having not been inaugurated into it for an 8-episode season of TV. I didn't know how inaccessible House of the Dragon would be for me, but I followed along perfectly well and could enjoy that show in its own right. Though, of course, hearing a few things about Game of Thrones over the years, some of the house names and iconography and whatnot, that definitely helped to get into the House of the Dragon, but I didn't think it was completely necessary. You get the gist of it well enough. So, my anticipation for season two, probably higher than it should have been. Anticipating things too strongly is never a good thing, but I thought it was a pretty sure bet with this show because it was one of my favorites of, well, I guess 2022 when it came out, and had every reason to believe season two would be just as good, save for the writer's strike and actor's strike, which I don't believe actually affected this show. Correct? Sorry, mic's muted again.
My bad. It's been a bit. Yeah, I don't think it's affected this show as much as it did others, because I think the writing was already done on it beforehand, and I don't think it affected the actual shooting schedule from what I remember reading. Right. Yeah, I think that's how it worked.
Well, let's get right into our close-up then and discuss this show. And for those of you wondering why I might sound a little bit different today, sorry about that. I'm holding my microphone like an actual microphone, like I'm at a sports game or something. I'm about to ask people questions like an interview. My boom arm broke, and I'm going to need to fix that. So you're stuck with this for the next two episodes, which, by the way, are coming out bi-weekly now. Just another reminder on that before we hop into this thing. So, getting into our close-up, for real now. I was disappointed. I'm going to come right out the gate, I'll be honest. This is why I'm building it up a little with that anticipation bit a few minutes ago. First half of the season, excellent. Basically exactly what I wanted. The back half of this season, nothing happens. They basically just meander the entire way from episode 5 through 8. And, well, that's the long and short of it. We will definitely go into detail about all the meandering and all the good stuff, of which there was a lot, to be clear. This wasn't a total swing and a miss here. But it's like you swung, connected with the ball. It looked like it might be a homer, and then it was a foul ball or something. It went really far out. Not where you wanted it to go.
Yeah, I pretty much completely agree with you. I thought the first half of the season was really well done. I was like, okay, we're getting into it. We're getting into the actual Dance of the Dragons. You know, that's been told in the books and in Game of Thrones a little bit here and there. And then, yeah, just like after episode 4, later on just sort of teetered out. And I think it's in terms, there was like a huge dip in quality for me personally, just because of, I guess, some characters were missing, like strong characters, and then also just
all my favorites.
Yeah, all the just other stuff that would just kind of like drag the plot to a halt a little bit. The writing was a little bit different too, and it's weird because the reason I'm so mad about the second half of season 2, I don't think it's a bad season at all. I do think it is disappointing, however. Where the entirety of the first season, they were talking about how, all right, this is like the prequel show or whatever, but it's also like the prologue to the Dance of the Dragon. This is the season, then next season, it's going to be the start of the war, you're going to get all the battles, yada yada. And then you watch this season, and the first 4 episodes, it's leading up to that. It's doing well at this battle at Rook's Rest, which is probably the best, one of the best battles that they have produced for the Game of Thrones universe at HBO. And then it's more build-up. It's just more build-up and planning to go to war, which is not what we were told.
That's how I expected the season to start, not how I expected the season to end.
It's just weird because what HBO does, they do this, especially with some of their bigger shows, like Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, and even The Last of Us. They'll release like a quick 4 to 8 minute video on like summarizing the episode, like after it's premiered on YouTube, and I like to watch that just to get more into a deep dive in the writer's mindset. And then when I watched the last episode, I was like, okay, I need to know what they're thinking. And they just kept talking about how, oh, well, now season 3 is going to be the war and that yada yada. It's like, this is what you said a year and a half ago. This is what you told me a year and a half ago. And if you told me that, if you told me at the beginning of season 2, like, you know, don't get all your hopes up. Like, yes, this is the start, but it's not the entirety, or it's not, you know, the whole, it's not more than just one battle. Like, and it's just one battle. That's literally what it is. And a lot of the stuff, I don't know if HBO cut some budget because there is some, you know, crucial scenes that were just done off screen that I felt like would have been integral to a lot of the characters.
Well, see, I think that's the thing. That's the thing.
It just feels like a mess.
Yeah, it's, they didn't do just one battle in story. There were a lot of battles, but all happening off screen. Which I understand, yep. A lot of people love this world for its politics and the dealings of kings and queens and their councils and deciding the fates of nations. It is, well, more about the Game of Thrones and the politics than the actual warfare. The battles are just fun, gory spectacle for the audience to devour. But we really only got one big battle this season when we just kept hearing exposition and seeing the boards the kings were looking at where their castles are and hearing planning about what they were going to do and where they were going to move the armies. We see some of Sir Christian Cole's army camps and what the men feel like on the eve of battle and the way they're seeing the world, but we don't really see a lot of battle itself, which I never like to feel like a gluttonous consumer of entertainment who just looks for the shallow, fighty, stabby bits. But I was missing some, for sure. That said, I can understand how you did that one great battle at Rook's Rest, and anything else that fell short of that would have felt extremely disappointing after that fact. So maybe they felt, fine, we'll just do a big blowout for one battle halfway through, and let's not try to top it this season, because I'm sure season 3 is going to have a lot more action and focus more on that side of things. Or I can only hope. I don't know the source material. I don't know what's coming next in the story. But I like to hope they're saving some of the best for later.
Yeah, I think that. And again, this is all speculation right now. It's, you don't know if HBO did some budget cuts in terms of battles, or if it was some of the writers, because the main showrunner who worked on the first season, Miguel Shapachnik, he left after the first season. And he had worked on Game of Thrones for the longest time. He famously directed the most famous battle, which was the Battle of the Bastards. So who knows why he left. And again, that's also speculation. But it just feels like, okay, you're able to do it once. Why not be able just to even show, like, a little bit? And the one I'm talking about, this is kind of getting into spoilers, is after... Oh, God, I can't remember the context. But Aemon burns down a city, I think, in the final or second to last episode.
Yeah.
And you just see the aftermath of it. And you're just kind of like, oh, he just burned down a city. And yeah, we Game of Thrones fans have seen people been burned on fire a lot. But it's just kind of, you're just kind of like confused by it. And like, it would have been cool to see, like, to actually see like the more of the Targaryens losing their mind, because that's in the lore. It's the, you know, all the Targaryens are mad because, hey, a lot of them are incestual. All of them, actually. So yeah, it's pretty jarring, and especially when the last episode is focused so much on this one side character and this woman from Braavos, where it's like, the writing around that doesn't make sense, and that's the part that pisses me off, is like, the showrunner at the time, or not that at the time, but the, what's his name? But the guy who's running it now, I think it's Alan Taylor. It's either Alan Taylor or Ryan Condal said this. It was like, oh, we felt like we need a little bit of levity because how heavy the season's been. No, you fucking don't. Just, we know what the history is. Just play the fucking history. I don't need to be stuck watching Tywin Lannister in a mud wrestling for one of the Triarchy's leaders. And the writing, that doesn't make sense. She's like, I don't fight with anyone who's never bested me. So what you're telling me is every single person in your army beats you, but you're leading them? That makes no fucking sense. It's just, I don't know. And then it's like, oh, I want you to have sex with all my wives. It's like, is this supposed to be funny? Because it's not. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little amused by his bemusement of it all. He has good facial reactions, and what am I getting myself into? People tell me all my life the free states are weird. Okay, I'm seeing what I've been missing out on. But sure, let's do a bit of diplomacy here. Best I can.
When you're already cutting two episodes out of the season because you're saying this is all coming from the showrunners, by the way. They were like, oh, we didn't feel like we needed 10 episodes because they didn't want to drag out the plot. Fine. You've cut down two episodes, so you only have so much amount of time. And then you throw in this weird subplot that nobody really gives a fuck about. And I understand you need to show him actually going to the Triarchy and negotiating with these people. But it takes up like almost half the episode in the final episode. And you're just kind of like, what is happening?
Yeah, personally, I welcomed anything new at that point, because I feel like as below average as those scenes were, at least I was seeing a character who hadn't had much screen time up to that point in a place we hadn't seen before. When the whole back half of this season was the same characters recycling the same plot lines they've been doing all year long. More of Daemon and frickin' Harrenhal. More of Alicent crying about being a bad mother, or Rhaenyra like, well, I wanna do more stuff, but they're keeping me in the boardroom, and just the same. Aegon pouting, Aemon. He's like, oh, I wanna take the fight to my enemies, but same things. Whatever's happening, I'm doing a bad job running down the examples, but it's. We've seen it for like 5 hours by this point. So even though the Free States part is not amazing, I was happy with it at the time. It's one of those looking back at it from a more objective lens, you see the flaws. But by episode 8, I was craving a change.
I guess. I mean, just because like, something's new doesn't mean it's good.
I know, but when I was watching them, it took me a long time to finish the actual back half of the season. I watched them pretty well as they came out for the first half, and then for the back half, I was finding myself, well, you know, the show is good in very many ways, so why am I not enthralled to watch it? Why am I putting this off for so long? I basically watched the last 3 episodes about a week ago, which I guess is 2 or 3 weeks ago by the time this episode comes out. But yeah, I just was not wanting to watch the show and finish it up because it was becoming a slog. And also just emotionally depressing and draining. It's a lot of heavy material, which is mostly what I was blaming it on, was my mood. But now that I'm finished, I think it's because I just wasn't that engaged in the back half of the show. Despite being emotionally draining, I'd be more compelled to watch it if I was getting something out of it. Which everything I got out of it, I'd already seen by that point. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a downer of a season, especially in the back, last half of it, just because of how much like nothing happens. But yeah, it's just it's strange because I do think this season has some of the best and also worst in capes of writing and dialogue, which is kind of strange. I don't know how. It's kind of impressive that they do that.
Mind you, I still feel like the quote-unquote worst of this writing is better than most entertainment I see still.
Oh, for sure. I still think this is, it's pretty good. It's some of the best television that I've seen in the past couple of years. Yeah,
it's still a good show. Let's not mince words.
Yeah.
It's just disappointing because season 1 was exceptional.
Mm-hmm. And we were expecting so much more from the last half of season 2 that we didn't get, and that's the part that's a bit disappointing.
But disappointing that, doesn't equal bad. It just means
no.
We wanted more and have to adjust our expectations accordingly. We'll probably remember season 2 a little more fondly, especially if the back half of the series is a train wreck. We'll say, oh, yeah, we didn't know how bad it could have gotten.
Unless season 3 is more build up, and then I'll be like, okay, this is bullshit. Now you're just lying to me.
Yeah, see, I think they already talked about they are doing 4 seasons for the show, correct?
I think George R. R. Martin said to tell the whole Dance of Dragons it would take 5 seasons, so they might do 4 or 5.
Okay, so already what I'm gathering is they don't have 5 seasons worth of material. They're going to drag it out to 5, but maybe seasons 3 and 5 will be good. I think Justin, who doesn't watch the show, made a really good analogy. He says that they're probably going to do to Dance of the Dragons what they did to the Hobbit movies, where the story basically... He was talking specifically about Battle of the Five Armies, where the story of the Hobbit basically ends in the first 10 minutes of that movie, and then there's another 2.5 hours afterwards, where they're just filling up screen time to have big battle scenes and fill out a whole trilogy because we feel like we need more to make money. It has to be a trilogy, right? So, once again, him having not seen the show, I kind of agree with him based on the way season two's going. I think this is going to get really padded out with a lot of gold shining in the middle.
Probably, yeah. I don't know. I still have like a little bit of hope, but after the last back half of this season, it's not looking great so far. But it's weird because it's like it's all the same team for the whole season.
Yeah.
And the first half was so good, and then the rest it just was like, it was like a disappointing roller coaster.
You said the showrunner left?
From the first season, yes.
Well, then I'm going to place the blame on that, because no matter how good a team you have working on your show, the best of the best can falter without proper leadership. And I think it is shown. Like you, we were talking about, the writing is still on point for most of it, even though the overall plot is a bit of a mess. The actors are still doing an amazing job. The set designers and special effects artists and everybody who works on this show is still putting out a quality product. But that top-down vision, that overarching, what's this season going to be about? How are we structuring it and pacing it? That is what's falling apart. And I think that comes from the top down. The writers can only do so much when the showrunner has, I hesitate to say subpar vision because it's still better than most entertainment out there, but definitely a notable drop in quality from the first season, and I don't know who else to pin the blame on besides that one change.
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite strange in terms of just like how there was such a drop in quality in the same season. And it's just, it is mind-boggling.
I have another thing too, actually. I also blame Patty Considine for leaving the show. And I know that's the whole point of season two, is that the absence of King Viserys screws everything up. And you really feel it this season. Without Viserys, the show becomes a lot messier. And this season two being very inconsistent works in a funny enough in a meta-textual way because of that. Like, wow, when Viserys was the star of the show had structure. The show had, I mean, it was pretty fast-paced, but it was better pacing and had more of a focus. Season two feels a little more all over the place without exceptional focus and just plots kind of dangling and not resolving or moving the way you'd want. Just, his absence is strongly felt.
Yeah.
Which is why,
sure,
I was very happy to see him make a few cameos here and there, but in the back half.
Yeah, I was shocked to see both Patty return and
Millie Alcock.
Millie Alcock for a little bit. That was like, wow, I can't believe they did this. And it kind of works, and it's not even just like, I will defend the writing a little bit here since I've just been shitting on it the whole time. It does work within the world. Like, there's magic and stuff, and it would make sense to bring him back if Daemon's being plagued by visions of his past and his guilt creeping up on him. So I thought it was a good surprise. It's better cameos than fucking they've done in Game of Thrones, I'll tell you that. I'll spoil this one. Ed Sheeran shows up for no reason in season 7. That's jarring.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, at least these cameos are consistent with the world they created. I know who they're supposed to be and why Daemon's seeing them in the way he's seeing them. Which was also
and
smart
know...
to get...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also smart to get Millie Alcock because after they have that blowout fight before he leaves for Harrenhal, he doesn't come face to face with Emma Darcy's version of Rhaenyra again till the end of the season. So it was nice for him to be able to have a confrontation with Rhaenyra, but also the way he still sees her as a younger woman who he can try to manipulate and was more innocent and malleable compared to him who worshipped him. this is the version of Rhaenyra he wants to see and who he has to reconcile that that's not who she is anymore. So it worked for the story in multiple ways, and it was just nice seeing Millie Alcock back.
Yeah, for sure. I know people are going to disagree with me on this, and from a writing thing, it is repetitive. And I know in any other medium, I agree. But I really loved the Harrenhal stuff. I don't know why.
Okay.
Maybe it's because it's the magic stuff. Because Game of Thrones,
it was a vibe.
The television show, didn't really touch that much on magic. They didn't really explore that much. There's a lot of it in the books. So finally seeing it on screen was a welcome treat. And I don't know. I just love an asshole character being tortured by his own past trauma and him coming to terms with reality. I thought it was so well done. Him having sex with his mother, it was pretty weird, and I didn't like that. That was a weird vision. But seeing, you know, Viserys again, seeing young Rhaenyra again, I thought was well done. You didn't know really if it was the witch was doing it or if it was the place itself, because the entire lore of Harrenhal is that it's cursed and they're surrounded by weirwood trees and the roots are all under the ground and they're magical and connects to the old gods and all that. But I enjoyed it. I could be the outlier here, but I thought it was fun.
Look,
a welcome difference for everybody sitting around and doing fuck all.
My take on Harrenhal is I enjoyed a lot about it. I wish it was half as long. I think what's there is good. When I go and tell people the story of Harrenhal and I sum it up in 5 minutes, there's a lot of good stuff happening there. I like how he's being manipulated by that probable witch who tells him about all the magic stuff. There's some cool lore drops there. I like how he tries to manipulate the clans into getting together by basically slaughtering one of them. And then there's like, what do you mean you flew the banner House Targaryen and basically pinned the whole blame on me? Like, I didn't want that. Yeah, I gave the order, but what do you mean I have consequences now? You all hate me. How he couldn't proceed because there was the old man who they all swore fealty to who just wouldn't die. And he hit a roadblock there with the stubbornness of the people and his own missteps with them. Him wrestling with trying to take this army for himself if he can raise them up. And, hey, Rhaenyra is welcome to join me as my consort when we get back to King's Landing. And having to come all the way around and be like, no, I'm fine with being the king consort, bend the knee to Rhaenyra in the end. Or I also love the ending of it all when that Lord Oscar Tully took over from his grandfather, and you think he's just going to be a weak, ineffectual young man, and he puts Daemon in his place very effectively. That was a great scene when he makes Daemon assassinate his own right-hand man in the at Harrenhal and bring justice between the two houses and asserts himself as a competent leader and someone Daemon should respect as well. It had good payoff. It just took too long to get there. It was good build-up, good payoff, yeah. But just too long. And also, that's the problem is Matt Smith is the most entertaining character on the show, and you put him apart from the entire main cast for 80% of the show. It hurts the rest of the show, not seeing him interact with other people.
Yeah, it totally does.
His chaos is needed.
That's what's funny about episode 2 and how it's like, I think it's the best episode out of the whole season. In terms of writing as well, especially with the Daemon and Rhaenyra argument, I think that is what very extraordinarily acted and written. And then also the Otto Hightower and the Aegon scene as well.
I can't believe they were both in the same episode. Those were amazing. That's amazing TV.
Brilliant scenes. Otto Rice Ifans, if I'm pronouncing that last name. Yeah. He should get an Emmy for that scene alone. He is
careful how you
phenomenal.
Talk to your sire. The king is my grandson, and my grandson is a fool.
He's brilliant, and again, I hate the Greens. I hate their scheming, but I love watching Otto Hightower. I think he's an excellent character, and that's why I love this universe and these shows, because you can love the characters you're supposed to hate, and then vice versa. And then, and then he just disappears for, like, the rest of the season besides one clip after, like, there's a montage at the end that someone has captured him. And I think, sadly, is where a lot of the weakness comes from in this season, is because he's not there. He's not there for a majority of it.
He's gone. Who else did they sideline as well? Well, we could talk about him more later, but I thought Ty Tennant as King Aegon had a great showing this season. Aegon is still is still a prick, but they really turn him into a three-dimensional character who you maybe not root for, but you definitely empathize with more.
Yeah.
And they sideline him for a lot of the back half too while he's getting better. Who else here?
The reaction to his son's death was really well done.
Yes. Speaking of his son, I wish Helena Targaryen had more to do as well. They sidelined Sir Criston Cole. Sir Criston Cole was barely in the back half of the season either.
Yeah, I don't
he is
still
great.
Hate Criston Cole.
I love how he riles people up. He gets the plot moving. You don't have to like him, but he does stuff, and it keeps things going. Mm-hmm. Who
you
else disappeared?
Anyway.
For a really long time.
The sea snake kind of disappears for a little bit too. He just keeps Corlys, checking on his ship every other episode.
Yeah, he disappears. And then, as we said, Matt Smith gets shipped off to Harrenhal. He's in the show, but he's not with anybody else, so he's effectively gone too. So basically, a lot of my favorite characters were either not interacting with the people they had the best chemistry with, or they were just flat out gone. Which, fine. Yeah. In the case of Otto Hightower, I see what they were doing. The fact that he was missing for so long at first, okay, he had a big blow-up fight with his family and decided to leave. Okay, he can have a break, make his absence feel felt for a couple episodes, and then he'll be back, right? Wait, he's not back? That's weird. And then around, I think it was episode 7, Allison starts asking her brother, hey, you heard from Dad? I've been sending him some letters, and like he's not answering back. Oh, he's just traveling, probably. Oh, so even they're acknowledging that's he's been gone a little too long. They're feeling it too, even. And then by episode 8, I'm like, okay, but seriously, where the hell is Otto Hightower? What the frick did you do with him?
Yeah.
And then they show him in the cage, and I'm like, okay, fine. You did get me. You put him away for so long, you made me wonder. But also, I wanted him in more. He was gone for too long.
Here's what kind of pisses me off about that reveal. It's like, okay, you throw in kind of, not cheap, a little laser reveal that he's been captured the whole time. But the only way it makes sense, if it's not someone who's under Rhaenyra or Daemon. Like, you know what I mean? Because, like, if it was...
maybe.
Like, if it was under one of those people, then they would have told, like, hey, we have the fucking Hand of the King. Like, this is a very powerful prisoner. They would have told Rhaenyra or Daemon at that point. Because why wouldn't you? So it's the only reason it makes sense. And if it's next season they reveal it's someone under them, it's completely stupid. But yeah, I guess it could be one of the Free States. That's across the sea, but also, like, why is he... Actually, no, it wouldn't make sense if he was traveling by boat, because he has to go back to the Citadel, which is where the Hightowers live. So, I think that's by boat, if I'm remembering correctly.
I don't know who else is a free agent here.
Yeah, there's not many, like, free agents, and, yeah. I think, just to sort of, to kind of only go back, because we're just talking about characters... I think the reason why I like the Harrenhal stuff so much is because it's the only plot that we get any character progression, like, throughout the whole season, or it feels like we're getting any character arcs, really. Like, Rhaenyra, throughout the whole season, she's just trying to not be in the war that's already started. Aegon just wants to murder her sister and get it over with for the whole season. Queen Alicent kind of does not even a character arc, but a backtrack, where she is kind of like, oh, I messed up. I'm going to go have a, like, a therapy session in the woods and then beg for, you know, my son's, or beg for my family's lives to Rhaenyra later. Lord Corlys doesn't do anything.
Mope.
Princess Rhaenys sacrifices herself, so that's an end to her character. But with Prince Daemon, he fully has this entire, like, great, you know, sort of character progression where he's trying to lead by example, how he only knows how, and that's through violence, and how he thinks a war should be led by is with violence and forcing people to do what he says, because that's what he's done his entire life as a dragon rider, as a Targaryen. But then he just slowly realizes throughout these episodes he is a terrible diplomat, and he can't just force people to do what he says all the time, that he does have to sort of bend his will a little bit in order to get people on his side. And he realizes he can't do that, so he does once again bend the knee to Rhaenyra, which I've seen some people be like, well, didn't he do that at the end of the first season? Yeah, but he didn't really do it. He just did it because there was people there. But this is him finally accepting that he's fine being the king consort, or, you know, the prince consort or whatever. So that's the only character I felt like had any actual character progression, while others just kind of stayed where they are or backtracked.
Personally, the second best one, I'll argue, is King Aegon, because he starts off the season super cocky, very easy to manipulate by Otto Hightower, and then Kristen Cole sort of like, you know what? No, I trust you, Kristen Cole. Otto Hightower, you're fired. And he's making boneheaded decisions, like hanging the rat catchers. It's like Otto Hightower was saying, like, your son dying was basically a blessing in disguise. It got everybody on your side, and I made sure of that, and then you just pissed everybody off right again. What a boneheaded move. So Aegon gets so cocky that even though Aemon is out there at Rook's Rest with Vhagar, and he's going to do the big fight, Aegon has that ego in his mind, like, you know what, no, I'm going to be the legacy of Aegon the Conqueror. I'm going to get this fancy armor. I'm going to ride into battle. And then he gets cooked. In the back half of the season, the back half of the season's him bedridden, like, well, I'm never going to be Aegon the Conqueror. My brother wants to kill me. I'm in my home and still technically respected, but also I fear for my life here. I am helpless. I realize all the ways I messed up, even just before he did the big mess up. You know, his grandfather turned on him. His mother chewed him out, too, for being an idiot. He's like, even the people I most respected think I'm an idiot and ineffectual. So he's just broken down completely in mind, in body, just feeling absolutely worthless. And then Lara Strong... You're forgetting...
Real king figure there.
You're forgetting the character progression part where he's at his lowest and Lara Strong helps him bounce back and says, well, look, the thing is you
bounce
are...
Bounce back by running away?
Yep. You are broken physically, but people are going to underestimate you now. So I'm going to teach you how to use that. And when the dust settles, you can come and reclaim your throne. Because I think, and I agree with Lord Larys' assessment there, Aegon staying out of the spotlight's the best thing for him. Because when he's in the spotlight, he makes stupid moves. Let Aemon look like, you know, the tyrant king who burns people's towns down. Oh, we don't want him. Let Rhaenyra be the one who blockades King's Landing and makes the people starve and brings war to the doorstep of everybody's home. let them fight their war and just make everyone hate the rulers who are in place right now. So by the time Aegon comes back out of the ashes and brings peace to the land, well, he may not be the best king, but he wasn't the one waging war on everybody either. There can be peace under King Aegon. It's a great political move. Doing nothing is the best thing for him politically. Stay out of the limelight, don't participate, and be the hero afterwards for it. Is it cowardly? Sure, but he tried being heroic and it blew up in his face. The wise move, which he's finally heeding some wisdom, is to just stay out of it and let the people who are better at politicking do the politicking. His character progression is actually learning to take some advice.
Yeah, I mean, he was told to do nothing. And then when he did something, like an idiot, he got burned for it. And so when he's told to do nothing again, he fucks off and runs away.
Yeah.
And
smart.
Say what you will. The Greens win. Aemon's gone. Allison's there, whatever. So he comes back. And they're like, oh, King Aegon, thank you for, you know, protecting yourself and not helping in this war effort whatsoever. We'll gladly take you back as king. Real stoic leadership there. I'm not talking about not doing anything, but just like, just fucking off of a war that he helped create. That's great leadership there.
Well, once again, it's all PR after the fact. What you do during the war doesn't actually matter. It's how people remember after the fact. And after the fact, he'll be the most loved because nobody has anything good or bad to say about him. The people of Westeros don't know that he just left. They know he's basically destroyed physically and needed time to recuperate.
I mean, they know that he murdered a bunch of rat catchers.
After a war, nobody remembers things like that. Once you see like Aemon burning whole villages to the ground and the people are starving and begging for their lives and just want the war to be over, political things like, oh, killing the rat catchers, bad in peacetime, seems tame after a war. Especially when these people who are waging war are a lot more hardcore. Once you have battles with dragons and everyone's fearing for their lives and just wants peace, once again, it's all PR. I'm not talking morally here. What's good and bad doesn't matter. It's all about how it can be spun.
But he doesn't do anything. Like, the Greens don't do anything to try to win over the people whatsoever.
Yep.
They don't do anything. Like, when they're starving and right before the riot when they attack Alicent and Helaena in the streets, they're pleading with Aemon to help the food provisions and, like, take from their stock or whatever, like, their private, like, royal stock or whatever. And he's like, no, they'll find their own way. So, like, they don't care about the people's opinion.
Look,
they
have
the throne. Why would they care about the people's opinion?
The thing about Aegon
is
that's
why it was brilliant when Rhaenyra is like, "Hey, I'm going to sneak food into the city, even though I'm
she's blockading."
Up the blockade.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which I find funny that everyone seemed to conveniently forget about. Why are you blaming King's Landing for not giving you enough food when Rhaenyra is the one who's blockading the city? Like, are you forgetting that? Yeah, she's giving you food, but she's also the one who starved you in the first place. It was weird for.
Shouldn't have taken her throne.
I don't think the people of King's Landing really care that much. They're just upset to be starved for no reason. Like, well,
they're the common people. Their opinion doesn't matter. And now the whole argument has flipped their switch.
Yeah, that's a running theme of the season. But what was my point? Yeah, Aegon actually did want to help people, though.
To talk about the common people just the tiniest bit.
That's a big
theme. I like
that
they focused on them on this season. We've never focused on that at all in the Game of Thrones franchise in terms of the television show. So I'm glad that they focused on them quite a bit throughout the season. Was there one character or two that I didn't care about? Yeah, but that's okay. They're just not my cup of tea. But it was cool to see a common folks perspective. Anyway, you were saying?
Yeah, we will circle around back to that for sure. But I was saying King Aegon, for all his faults, actually did want to help the people to the chagrin of Otto Hightower and everybody else. Like, why are you making promises? Like, well, because they want help and we can give it to them. No, don't make promises because then they'll actually expect it. And if you can't keep it, that's bad. Which, fair enough. But he does readily say yes with an open heart because he does want to give as much help as he can provide. It's just...
Yeah, that's one good quality about him, I'll admit it.
The others don't even care. You know, Aemon didn't care to follow through. Otto Hightower is the one who specifically advised him against it. And even Rhaenyra doesn't really seem to give a crap about the common folk, really. She cares about her legacy and...
She cares about their opinion, but not their actual well-being.
Yeah, she cares more about her birthright being usurped, and I want to be queen because I feel it's my birthright, not because she actually has any grand plans for the kingdom to make it better for the common folk or to be a particularly good ruler. She just feels wronged.
To unite the kingdoms together to fight with the Song of Ice and Fire. We've been over this.
Yes, there was this the Song of Ice and Fire that literally two people know about.
That's the whole point. It's her.
Fine, three if you count Alicent because she told her. So three people in all of existence.
Four because she told her son. Because not Alicent, who was told. Jace. He told Jace at the end of one of the episodes.
Yeah, he was the third one I was thinking of. Allison, Rhaenyra,
Jace.
Oh,
sorry. I thought you were talking about Viserys.
Viserys was, yeah. So there's three people currently living who know about that. Nobody else cares. Actually, Daemon knows now, too.
They don't need to know.
No, Daemon figured it out in Harrenhal. He saw a vision of the future and all that.
The vision saw Bloodraven. You don't know who that is, but that's pretty cool.
I don't.
It was the guy in the tree with the thing on his face.
Okay. Yeah. So there
is
all
weird
that.
Because Bloodraven happens after this show, which is, whoa, crazy, magic. Whoa. Anyway, in terms of timeline.
Yeah. So, I will give Rhaenyra this, though, her line about, well, then let's create an army of bastards. That was one of the coolest lines of the season, for sure.
Yeah.
What I will say about Rhaenyra.
Scene.
Yeah.
In terms of the back half of the rest of the season, them trying to, the second time. Well, I guess both scenes were good with them trying to tame the dragons. I thought that was well done, especially the one shot with like everybody's burning alive. And is it Ulf or is it the other guy? The other guy's a badass.
There
blacksmith.
Ulf and, no, Ulf was the other guy. I don't remember the blacksmith.
Yeah,
name
Ulf's
right
the
there.
Drunk. Oh, God. There's so many characters in this show. Hugh.
Yeah.
It's Hugh, isn't it?
Maybe.
Yeah. I think it's Hugh.
Hugh.
Yeah, Hugh. He was the blacksmith. I thought he was pretty sick.
Yeah, I liked him. I didn't know how he was going to factor in, though, until, like, Ulf was bragging about being a Targaryen bastard for so long, but I didn't expect that from the blacksmith guy. So when that finally came up, I'm like, oh, that's how he's relevant. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was just like, he's
weird
like...
too. Well, like, when we're first introduced to him, he's, like, bragging about how he's a bastard of King Jaehaerys, like, very openly, mere seconds before Aegon shows up. And he's, like, to the rightful queen of Rhaenyra Targaryen, like, mere seconds. I was like, how does nobody rat on this guy? But I guess he's so lovable, I guess, is what the... I guess what they're trying to say. It's like he's kind of a man of the people, I guess.
I like later when he's showing some sass, when it's like, well, a knight of the kingdom wouldn't behave this way. Well, then you better go make me a knight.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that scene, like, when they're all like three of them together, and he's like, he's just like being an absolute asshole to like the queen. It's like, I understand it's a part of his character, but just like this... She literally gave you a dragon, dog. Like, show a little bit of, like, respect. Put your fucking feet down. I don't know. That's just his character.
Yeah, I think a big, as I, coming back to All the Bastards, that was a, the usefulness of these bastard Targaryen children is a primary theme of the season. It's all about these discarded children trying to reclaim some sense of self-worth, however they can. Whether just by being really good at their jobs, like Hugh or, yeah. I don't remember the guy's name right now, but Corlys is one son who he made into first mate.
Adam?
Adam. And
or is it the other one?
I think Adam's the other one.
Okay.
I think Alan's that guy and Adam.
Alan and Adam. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Alan is just, he contents himself with being a really good first mate at his job. Adam, Hugh, and Ulf all become dragon riders. And even Jace wrestles with his worth, because even though he was born illegitimately, but he's like, oh man, all these other bastards getting the spotlight makes me less special. That was basically his entire arc this season.
Yeah.
Just being really pissy about that.
Which is weird, because I know from the book, from what I've heard, it was his idea, was to recruit
Well, it was.
All the
bastards. He did that in the show, too. It was his idea. Well, okay.
It's his idea, but he's in the book, he's not pissed about it. His entire character arc is him being pissed off in the show.
What happened was, in the show, he said, let's try and recruit some of the branched off Targaryen bloodline, which they were only looking at the legitimate bloodline at first, until that fell flat on its face. And then they're like, well, okay, maybe we're looking too far out. The bastard children are direct bloodline. They're like our cousins and brothers and sisters. They're like right there. Basically the same amount of bloodline as we have. We're not like getting into like, oh, you're 1/8 Targaryen or whatever. They're like full Targaryens, just not legitimate. And that was the part Jace got pissed about.
Yeah.
Was that they're letting these ones in now. Yeah. Although, as many people claim, he is the bastard son of the queen, but he also was legitimized by his other grandfathers as well, who claimed him as an heir. So he is a bastard by birth, but he was claimed, so he is legitimate. But yeah, he just feels like, oh, if all the other bastards get to do something special, then I won't look special. Everybody knows what I am, and how are they going to accept me as king if everybody else gets to be special now? Like, I was the bastard who could be king. Now they can all be dragon riders too. What's left for me? Which, one thing I enjoyed about this season was the theme of motherhood was very prevalent throughout it. And I liked how it got flipped on its head. At the beginning of the season, we see Rhaenyra and Jace have a very strong bond. I quite like their relationship. They're very... She's an emotionally understanding mother, and he's a dutiful son, and that's good. But then later on in the storyline, Jace starts to underestimate his mother, starts to be a little misogynistic towards her, act like, oh, like what are you going to do with Daemon still in Harrenhal? He hasn't raised the army yet. So like, come on, mom, what are you doing? Why aren't you letting me fight? Why, like, what are you going to do without Daemon? And start disregarding her a little more publicly and starts being pissy about her decisions more and more openly until the point where she's finally fed up with him. Like, stop undermining me in my own house, boy. Just quit it. And then Alicent is the mirror image of that, where I've seen people point this out and I really like it, where she's talking to Otto Hightower and she wants to admit to him about her affair with Sir Criston Cole to unburden herself of the guilt. And Otto Hightower is basically like, I don't want to know. Just don't. And then she immediately applies that same parenting style to Aegon when he's trying to unburden himself on her. So you see that cycle of emotionally abusive parenting. She forces Helaena to ride in the parade with her dead son, even though she knows that'll basically, like, she doesn't like being the center of attention for one, and she's a grieving mother for another. So that was not nice either. She clearly failed Aemon's needs because she underestimated his inner bitterness, and that turned him into a tyrant. And then her other son is just off screen, and she never sees him. But then later on in the season, she realizes how badly she messed up. She actually tries giving more advice to Aemon. She's more empathetic towards Helaena. She pities Aegon, but she also is nicer to him too and starts seeing him for his good qualities. She actually inquires about her other son as well. I think at this point her kids are mostly annoyed with her. But by the end of the season, basically, yeah. Rhaenyra and her son have a lot of friction between them, and Alicent is doing her best to bridge the gap between her and her children. By the end of the season,
that is like one. It's like that is like a one good aspect of Alison Hightower's character is that she's failed so much at just being an actual mother, or she's never felt like she was such a natural mother as much as Rhaenyra was. And I think a lot of animosity towards Rhaenyra is shown through that. Now she's making up for lost time, but it's far too late. I mean, the only one you can kind of feel like she cared about a little bit was Helaena, because she's kind of been put in the same position, you know, forced to marry someone she didn't want to. But even when you'd see early scenes in season one where they would she would hang out with her, you could tell she's just bored and has nothing to do with her, or wants nothing to do with her. So when she's trying to make up for lost time, you can feel that a little bit. And when she talks to her brother about her other son who is away in the Citadel, or I can't remember what it's called.
The Hightower Palace, yeah. Wherever it is.
Son we haven't seen yet. So you can see that little bit of character progression. But it's far too late.
I love that scene, though, when she's talking to her brother about him, and she asks what that son is like, and Gwaine basically says that, oh yeah, he's a good kid on his way to become a good man, and he's actually pretty well rounded. And she's basically like, well, yeah, then I'm glad he grew up away from King's Landing. I guess this place is just poisonous to everybody who spends too much time here.
Yeah, that's a really good scene. He's like, how is he? And then Gwaine just kind of stops being mad at her for a second, and he just goes, she's kind, or he's kind. And she's like, finally, like, one of my kids isn't fucking insane or just like a decent person.
But also I think she feels bitter about just a little bit. It's like, well, it's bittersweet because, wow, my kid's kind, that's great, but he's also the one who I didn't raise personally and wasn't anywhere around my family on like Viserys's family or my family on either side. Like, it's great that he's kind, but it's sad that he only became kind because he was so far away from the rest of us.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah, what else?
So Christian Cole's a hypocrite.
Well, we knew that already.
Yeah, but it just goes to show how much more of an absolute idiot. Not idiot, but like, he keeps talking about all these morals and he just keeps fucking up anyway. Which I think is fun. Well, not fucking up, or just like hiding under the cloak of his own righteousness, which is a line from the first season. Boom,
he did
use it against you.
He did admit it, though, this season, though. When Gwaine is like, I'm going to kill you for sleeping with my sister. And he's like, do it, man. I admit it. I'm
it.
I'm a complete hypocrite. Yeah, like, I'm a complete hypocrite. I just don't care anymore, though. I saw everyone get slaughtered. I'm just like, I feel like an ant in this world now, just completely insignificant in a world of dragons.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He admitted it, and he feels
bad. I forgive you for everything. No, I don't give a fuck. Your whole, you and Allison's entire argument for why Rhaenyra shouldn't be on the throne is because she's a bitch queen, a whore, a cunt of Dragonstone, because she sleeps around with all these men and has all these bastard children. Meanwhile, you two are fucking behind the scenes, which should do because, A, you're Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, so you're supposed to be celibate, and she's a widow
Rhaenyra
of the king.
Rhaenyra ruined that for him.
Okay. You said it was a bad thing to do. You shouldn't have done that then, and you shouldn't have done it now. You keep talking about, and then you go around and you see these other Night's Watch, but I mean Kingsguard, and you're talking to them, and you're basically saying like, "Oh, you're a worse person because of me," but you're just basically blaming the others for what you're doing. You're a terrible person.
Yeah, well, I did like
because he got rejected by a woman he slept with once. And he just became the most toxic man I've ever seen in my life.
I like that conversation later on when Rhaenyra spitefully tries to turn that onto Allison. He's like, oh, you've been on your high horse against me all these years, basically everything you just said. And I'm struggling to remember Allison's reply right now. But basically, I did my whole life doing everything right. And look where it's gotten me. So forgive me if I want one little comfort. Yeah, like, she likes Kristen Cole for whatever reason, and it's like, well, I didn't, like, it's not like I was having an affair with Viserys. I did stay faithful to him while we were married, and like, well, what do you want me to do? I'm not married anymore. I'm lonely. I did my whole life the proper way, and like, you got away with doing whatever you wanted your entire life. Basically,
no, I agree on Allison's side. I totally get it because her entire life, she's never been able to choose what she wanted to do. She was forced into this marriage with Viserys. She was forced to have these children. She was basically forced to even be against Rhaenyra,
she was forced,
best friend.
And like she said, she was forced into so a she life gets, of public service when she just wanted to be a very introverted mm-hmm. person and stay completely out of public eye. And she's the queen.
So now she has autonomy and she has her own will and she finally feels like she has some control over her life. And whether it just be her actual freedom or sexual freedom with Christian Cole, that's the one thing that she's able to have her freedom with. And from her side, I completely get it. From Christian Cole's side, he's just a fucking hypocrite and needs to shut his goddamn mouth. I just hate him so much.
Yeah, but he's had sex with two queens, so you know he's not doing everything wrong.
I mean, he's not that many people can say that.
Two queens.
He gets the dumbest haircut before he goes in the bat. My God.
It looks
like
so
I don't
much
even
worse
know why they.
Other one, though.
Why do they do that to him? Like, his hair was fine at the beginning of the scene, and then he goes in the battle, and he gets a bowl cut.
It's not
what
flattering.
Are we doing? It's so bad. And he gets the dumb necklace, too. It looks awful.
Hair and makeup did a good job for most of this show, but not on Kristen Cole. Somebody on the hair and
Fabian
makeup team
Frankel,
hates Kristen Cole
good,
as much as...
You're a good-looking man, but they did not do you justice, my guy. Holy.
Yeah. Let's see what else here. Let's see. There was that one character, I think her name is Missaria.
Yes, the White Worm.
Yeah, her relationship with Rhaenyra was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, another, like, especially after Rhaenys dies, oh, the only other woman in, basically on my staff who gives me any kind of respect who I can see as an equal, and I trust your opinion. However, the scene where they shared a kiss together felt completely not set up to me. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Okay,
Do you know why it wasn't set up? Because that kiss was not in the script.
Really?
They just did it day of because both actors felt like it was natural to them for the scene, I guess.
It was just so funny to me how it was never acknowledged. Like, there was no build up for it. Until that very moment, and it was never acknowledged again. It just kind of makes it unintentionally funny. But it was just weird.
The context before the kiss, too. Like, she's telling a story of how she was physically and, like, sexually abused by, I'm pretty sure, her father, or was, like, sold into slavery, too. So it's like, this is not the time to be making out.
Like, okay, Rhaenyra, you're lonely and you don't have very many friends, but this never felt like a romantic attraction.
No. I think it was more, I don't think it was, if I were to defend it a little bit, it was more of just like, they have all this built up passion and anger that they need to get out, and they just start doing it, but I don't know. It did come out of nowhere. It didn't bother me that much. I was just like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not against gay representation in media. Just, there was no setup for this one. I'm like, okay, if you want to say Rhaenyra's bi, that's fine. I don't care, but I just never saw any setup for it before now.
I saw it a little bit in the first season with more so the younger Rhaenyra than the older one.
If you want to tell me this,
of her flirting with Alicent.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to tell me this whole thing, if you want to tell me this entire storyline is a story between, is a lesbian love story between Rhaenyra and Alicent, I'd buy that.
Brilliant. I love it.
If you wanted to go with that there's precedent. I'd buy it. If they kissed in that last scene together, I would have been like, you know what? Okay. Sure. Let's go with this. It's not that far off base. But her and Miss Arya, No.
Yeah. So I don't think they're trying to set up a romantic thing. I think it was just like a moment of passion, but I could be wrong. And if that happens in the next season, they'll be like, okay. It's not going to bode well, because in this universe, and I think in this time, except in Dorne, they kill people for that. They kill people for being gay.
Actually, that was the whole point with Laris. Or is that his name, Laris?
Yeah. But he was Joffrey. That's what it was. Like, Laris was the son of the sea snake.
Of Corlys. Yeah.
And he was gay with Joffrey. Yeah. But I think he got away with it because he was the son of the sea snake. And that was the most rich family in the realm at the time. So it was known around Driftmark, but he probably just got away with it because he was rich. The rich get away with stuff. Shocking.
And here I watch fantasy for, unrealistic depiction of life.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I did enjoy watching Aemon Targaryen take power a little bit. I just think he's a badass. It's kind of one note a little bit here and there, and he's trying to emulate Prince Daemon so much.
I feel like I'm going to get...
I don't know what it is.
I'm going to get clipped for this, I'm pretty sure, but I swear there is a scene of me in Close Up a couple years ago where I talked about, you know what, I love Aemon Targaryen so much. Like, I wish, like, Aegon would just step aside and Aemon would take the throne, because I think he'd be so good at it. Like, out of everyone in that family besides Alicent, I think Aemon would be the best. And, okay, now we're here. And now I see. Oh, boy. Yeah, that bitterness was... I feel like Allison told me, well, that went a lot worse than I'd have expected. Okay, I take it back. Aemon is not king material. Okay.
Yeah. Especially with the common folk. He doesn't give a shit about them. He only cares about his power. And that's why I feel like the writing dips. And again, this is all in the back half of season two. Is because throughout even season one and the first part, you're led to believe that this guy is a much better quality leader than even Aegon. I mean, the Hand of the King is going behind Aegon's back and planning formations with his brother. So you're like, okay, they've done strategies. They're able to do that. He's, studied the blade. He's studied the history of kings and all that. So he's built up to be this guy. And he's just like Daemon. He's just a wartime king. So none of the Greens are fucking capable of leading. One gets drunk every fucking night and gets his squires to sleep with a bunch of people and then belittle his his prince brother right in front of everybody, and the other one just murders a whole town because he's angry. He's mad.
Look,
put Helena on the throne. Oh, wait, they don't want a woman on the throne. I forgot.
That was one of the, I don't want to say unintentionally funny, but it was a good moment of dramatic irony when Aegon gets burned. I think it's episode 5.
Oh, and they're for looking, sure.
And they're looking for a replacement, and then Alicent's like, you know, when King Viserys was sick, I basically did this whole job, right? Like, I can take over. It's fine. And then they all immediately shut her down. And once again, I've seen other people make this point, but I'll paraphrase them and be like, it was a great moment of realization that she tries to take the reins back and only then realizes that she's the one who set all this in motion.
Yeah.
If she's the one who made this entire thing happen because they didn't want a woman on the throne, and then she has the audacity to try and be the woman who takes leadership at this time, and then is kind of surprised when she's turned down. Like, you're the one who made this council of misogynists.
There was a meme going around where it's like, when you're shocked to find out that the guys who didn't want a woman on the throne wouldn't put you, a woman, on the throne.
Precisely.
It's like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen? I don't know.
But it was just that moment of realization. Oh, yeah, I messed up. Okay.
It's a good moment because the like world goes silent for her for a little bit. And she's just kind of saying like, well, fuck. I did fuck this up, didn't I? I should just let Rhaenyra be queen.
Yeah, even though she's the best leader in that room. And personally, Otto Hightower is a good leader, too.
That's true.
He's just a good puppet master is all. Under Aegon, he basically was the king when Aegon was staying in line. And things were fine for a little bit. Otto, this is what I said in the last episode. Otto and Alicent are good at what they do. It's the ones who are very Agreed. Vocal and power hungry on the green side that mess things up for the whole family.
Because they're actually in the seat.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alicent and Otto can, you know, give as much advice and control as much as they want. But when they put the people that shouldn't be in power in the chair, that's their biggest mistake. And that's why Team Green sucks.
Now, what I will give Rhaenyra is that Emma D'Arcy plays Rhaenyra as genuinely commanding. Great screen presence. I believe this person as a ruler. Rhaenyra is definitely more regal than anyone else on the green side. That being said, I probably still wouldn't vote for her, you know, be on that side. I still don't like Rhaenyra.
She does so much nothing in this season. It's crazy.
Yeah, she does so much nothing. She complains a lot, and she's basically just, I mean, they all complain. They're all complainers, really, but it's unbecoming of a queen, especially publicly, but she doesn't complain publicly. My point is, I just don't like her. I respect her in many, many ways, but I just don't like her. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go the other way.
That's fair.
That's not true. I'm going to go I like her well enough as a person, but I don't like her as a ruler. I think she's a great mother. She's a good, noble person. She's got some good ideas. Her heart's in the right place. She'd probably be the best ruler who's not Alicent Hightower or Otto. But I think she's just up on her high horse. She's from that noble Targaryen bloodline that feels super entitled and is very conservative about the way things ought to be. And you know what? We're from a long tradition that's kind of shitty, but we're not going to change it because this is the way things should be. This is my bloodline and my right, divine right to the rule. And if she gets in, things will go as business as usual. Which wasn't even that great to begin with. The Greens, for better or for worse, are shaking things up. They're kind of a social revolution. They're making changes. Aemon more for the tyrannical, Aegon more for the liberal, to be honest, trying to help people out as best he can. But there's something different. They're not the status quo. Rhaenyra is just the status quo, which they'd had for how long at that point between this bloodline and Aegon the Conqueror? Rhaenyra is just the next in line of same old, same old.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I remember rewatching the first season a little bit after our episode. And I came to the realization that the writing was so well done in terms of how they showed both Aegon and Rhaenyra in such a light and how both of them realistically are not a good match for the throne. It's just who both sides have chosen to be in the chair. You know, you have Rhaenyra who is all... She's the noble. She was chosen by her father as the next heir. She has all the titles and all the vows and whatnot, but she does nothing to prepare herself to be a queen or has no goals of trying to keep friendships or whatever. Really doesn't even try to have legitimate children with her husband at the time. And then there's Aegon, who's a complete degenerate. He's a drunk. He's a rapist. He doesn't care about the nobility. He doesn't care that he's a Targaryen. He gets no love from his parents because he's a degenerate, or it's just like a vicious cycle. And you just don't even know whose fault it is at the time. So yeah, it's funny seeing
neither were fit.
Kind of like both sides now. Neither one of them were fit.
Rhaenyra conducts herself more queenly at the very least. After a trial by fire, she seems like a more stable ruler. But I think it's also interesting that her council doesn't respect her either, despite bending the knee to her. None of the men in her life give her any respect.
That part,
which is very interesting.
I'm not going to lie. In terms of the writing, that part seemed a little forced. Whereas they didn't respect her, and it felt very much was like, oh, we don't respect her because she's a woman. She doesn't understand wartime. But if you're looking at the world, these are people who have already bent the knee to her, but they don't respect her opinion or respect her wishes, and they go off and they do their own things. And
that
I understand this is the world, like, this is the world of, like, Game of Thrones and how women are put into such, like... I don't know. I didn't agree with that writing choice. I don't know what it is.
I feel like
it just felt very one note. It's like, it's realistic, but it just felt very one note. Maybe that's just the reality of the world and even today's world as well, but...
My favorite moment from all that was when they're like, okay, but like, you're a woman and you don't really know wartime all that well, so just let the men deal with it. And she's like, excuse me, but, you know, my dad was Viserys the Peaceful, and if I'm not mistaken, we all grew up in peacetime. This is your first war, too, so you're no more qualified.
Shit.
Yeah. That was my favorite drop the mic moment, when she's like, you are no more qualified than I am to be running a war operation right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great moment for her. What else? I just remembered that Christian Cole got two Kingsguard killed. I just realized the two twins. Eric, which I don't know why they did that. That was in episode 2 as well. Good fight.
That was a good episode. That was the best episode. I mean, that in episode 4.
Yes.
Let's see. Who was that one? Try to find... I get them mixed up. There was Rhaena.
Yeah,
I get Baela and Rhaena.
I didn't need to see 4 random clips of her running around in the hills, like choking
in one
on
episode.
Water for her, in one episode for her to not even claim the dragon in that episode. Like just like a huge, just tease. Of, like, she's going to claim this dragon in the Vale that they've been talking about. No, she doesn't. We don't even see it. Why show it?
Baela did absolutely nothing this season except give Jace pep talks.
That's not true. She scared Christian Cole, which I thought was fun.
Okay, yeah, that was a good
scene.
She,
like, nosedived.
They're like, oh, crap, a dragon. I told you we shouldn't have crossed during the day.
And who was, is it Gawain? Allison's brother?
Yeah, Gawain.
Quinn. I love his reaction. He's like, what the fuck was that? He's like, never seen a dragon in action. So he just freaks out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, she doesn't. And I was excited to see Bela and Jace's connection in the second season because they're betrothed to each other. But all they do is just talk. Like, there's no. I didn't feel any chemistry between the two. That could just be, like, the actor's age or whatever, or just the writing was poor. But I was like, I don't believe that you two actually care about each other. Or that you would want to care about each other. Like, you're betrothed. Act betrothed.
I mean, I didn't really get couple energy out of them necessarily. But I'm like, yeah, you guys are friends, I guess. You have a mutual respect, your family, but...
Yeah. Seeing The Wall was cool again. And hearing the Stark theme. You don't know anything about this. But seeing Kraegan Stark was cool.
Is for.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I thought episode by episode, the pacing was okay. I wish some scenes were allowed to breathe a little bit more. Sometimes I feel like things got cut a little short. Especially in the end with all those scenes of trying to find the dragon. I'm like, okay, can we get like one extended scene out of this? Don't drag it out all episode. The season as a whole, I thought was being paced a little slow at first, but okay, things are ramping up, and then it just came to a standstill from episode 5 to 8.
Yeah. First episode, what a way to start the season. Fucking cutting a baby's head off. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That felt like a horror movie a little bit. I thought that was shot really well. Because you're in the Red Keep, it's raining, there's lightning everywhere. And you're
Elena's
following.
Gotta make the choice.
Yeah, just, I thought that was a great start to the season.
Yeah. I have this note written down here in terms of pacing, but the way I felt about it was the episodes all felt like a full meal. Great, nourishing, but I couldn't possibly take one more bite despite liking the food. And just, okay, yep, that was great. I'm full now. Okay, great meal. Okay, it's a lot. They pack a lot into an hour. Which I appreciate. I don't want, you know, Mandalorian-sized bites where it's just, like, half an hour or something. Like, damn it. It could range anywhere from half an hour to 45 minutes. Just be consistent. Give me an hour of drama and leave me satisfied for the week. They packed a lot in. Let's see.
How'd you feel about the actual dragon fight itself?
It was great.
Yeah. I feel like good.
Yeah, I feel like
it's the best the CG's looked.
Yes. Although I think that's a bit of a mixed bag. What I think is on the good side, it does look very good. But well, I won't get to the but yet. And also, I'm glad this show had more scenes in daylight. Because I think that was a direct response to criticism of last season where every scene was shot in darkness or made to look dark, and it was just way too dark.
Yeah.
So they had most of this season was shot in daylight or with better lighting, which I appreciated. But that also means we see the dragons a lot more in daylight, which means whatever flaws there are a lot more noticeable. I think kudos to them for making the dragons look consistently good in daylight, but I feel like I was less impressed with them this season than last season because the dragons were more in darkness last season and that gave them more of a spooky effect. It was more intimidating.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
When all the details are hidden. That also, just in general, I feel less intimidated by the dragons this year because we see them more. And even though it's cool CGI, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know that. Yeah, okay. I've seen the cool CGI. I've seen them be intimidating. It's like the effect is worn off in both ways, narratively and in terms of wow, cool special effects. just seeing too much of a cool thing makes it a little less special. But it is cool to see the dragon so much.
I think the problem with that too is that they don't show how much destruction the dragons can do. Like, of course, you see the destruction on the battlefield, but I honestly think that one missing scene of Aemon destroying that town would have really helped show, especially for people who haven't watched Game of Thrones, like how destructive one dragon can be to a town or to its people. Because most of the time in Rook's Rest, you know, there is a dragon, there's Rhaenys' dragon flying by and destroying, you know, whole garrisons. But most of it is just them fighting in the air. So you can't really tell, like, the destructive power between that. So I do agree with you a little bit, but I think they were held back in terms of showing how chaotic they can be.
We did get two great scenes, though. We got Rook's Rest, and we got when they were just obliterating all the bastard Targaryens in the cave.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a bloodbath, which, okay, we get to see some powers of dragons there. Going back to special effects for a second, I forgot to mention that the animators did an exceptional job of communicating the character traits of these dragons through body language. They all moved in unique ways and nearly had facial expressions, which denoted how they were thinking about certain situations. And despite the dragons not speaking, you do get an impression of the character of these dragons just based on their animations, which was really well done. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You can definitely feel, especially with Rhaenys' dragon, the connection they have together, and Caraxes with Daemon, and Vhagar a little bit with Aemon, but they don't really have like an emotional connection because he was kind of stolen. But yeah, mm-hmm. I totally agree. The one thing I will, because I'm usually a huge, big defender of CGI, but I think the one thing that doesn't look as good as it should or can, and this has been a problem since CGI, is just the comping of the real-life actors into the footage. And mm-hmm. I think the problem with Rook's Rest is because when they're shooting the dragon riders, they're on a soundstage, right? So they're using fake lighting, fake background or whatever, and the problem is they're in daylight, and there's no technology out there that can mimic the actual brightness of the sun. Yeah. So I think it's tough, and it's just how they need to do it. But so lighting plays such a key role in just VFX as a whole and how making things look real. So I think that is what needs to get fixed a little bit. But overall, I still think it looked amazing, especially the dragon's animation. I mean, it's always been like that, but yeah.
Yeah. I also thought
but for a TV show, it looks great.
Yeah, it looks...
TV show.
I also felt the filming was a little uninspired this season. I noticed there was a lot of stilted static camera work. There wasn't really a lot of movement, really. It's just, okay, here we frame you in a medium shot, and we'll cut back and forth between conversations. There wasn't really anything fancy or eye-grabbing or keeping the motion. It was very static and rigid.
Yeah.
I also question some of the cinematography choices. In a lot of the framings, it looked like blurry or something to me. Like the focus was like, well, okay, really shallow focus right on the front, and everything's way out of focus. And I'm like, is it because they're on a green screen or something, and they're just trying to hide the background, or is that just a choice? Are you obscuring the background because, like, is that a choice or a practical, oh, we're trying to hide something by making a really shallow focus? I couldn't tell, but I didn't really like the look. It looked strange.
The only, good shots the only times I was like, that's a good shot, was literally at the very end when I think it's Rhaenyra looking at
the dragon skull and it's all the candles around her, and then it's match cut to like Allison looking at the horizon or something. Those are the only two. I was like, those are good shots. But yeah, I completely agree. It was very uninspired in terms of the cinematography.
Not bad. Like, most of it works perfectly well. Like, that's basically the season in a nutshell. There's nothing I'm going to say, oh yeah, that was god awful. It didn't work for me at all. But, I mean, nothing exceptional either. It's just serviceable, which is good. I do like the production designs, though. Despite having some static production as a whole, I really enjoy the sets they created. Dragonstone is beautiful. King's Landing is distinct. The palace, all unique and aesthetic. The big standout this year is Harrenhal. I love this decrepit, decaying castle, raining all the time, always in darkness. Everything looks... is made out of stone, and it's just very uninviting to look at. It's creepy. It feels like a haunted mansion. Harrenhal's the big standout from a production design standpoint this year. Also,
it's something new in terms of the whole franchise visually, because we never really... Well, that's not true. Been to Harrenhal in the second season of Game of Thrones, but we didn't like fully explore it. Because we were just kind of in, like, one section.
Hmm. Also love the...
too spoilery.
Costume designs. My favorite are always Allison's green dresses.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason I'm on Team...
costume was superb.
A lot of the reason I'm on Team Green is because of those dresses. They're like, did the blacks have costume design that... I mean, Rhaenyra's are kind of cool. But she basically
dresses...
Well, we
can't all look like Fiona from Shrek. So...
Rhaenyra's dresses basically all look the same to me. They're all just like, wow, like kind
it
of
is
a
the
sharp
same dress.
Black.
wears like two dresses throughout the whole show.
Allison's always wearing different beautiful green dresses. Otto Hightower's got like cool green robes. He looks like a wizard or something in green.
The green's got style.
Yep. Aegon's usually got some cool green outfits as well. I mean, Aemon rides Vhagar, the coolest green dragon, giant green dragon. I mean, look at Aemon too. Like, Aemon's just badass. His whole look is like, is just sleek, black eye patch. The green's got style, man. Actually, I really like Jace's outfits too. He looks good with his, like, his half capes and breastplate.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, the costume design in the show has been very good. Production design, I agree with as well. I think a lot of it too is on set as well. I mean, there's quite a bit of green screen, I'm pretty sure, but I don't know if there's a lot of volume. There's probably some volume sets too, but I think a lot of it is practical.
That's good.
I mean, the way it's shot makes me believe it.
Yeah, definitely good. Well, final verdict here. The first half was pretty good. Second half is all right if you turn off your brain. It's a very 50-50 affair this year in terms of writing. I mean, the production design, costumes, acting, all that's consistent the entire way through, really. But the writing takes a definite downgrade. In the back half.
If only Otto Hightower was in one more episode. You know what I mean?
It would have saved the whole
season.
The
writing around that character is so good.
I think he's the writer's favorite, too.
It's funny, because he's on par with probably one of my favorite villains in the Game of Thrones universe. And there's Tywin Lannister in the main Game of Thrones show. You would love him. If you love Otto Hightower, you would love Tywin Lannister.
I anticipate
he's played
it.
By Charles Dance, and he's so good.
Yeah, so that's Game of Thrones Season 2. Which, funny enough, House of the Dragon Season 2. The Game of Thrones edition thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, like the season, Season one, you know, that was like, that was me and Ryan. We were, you know, house green, house black, just fighting the entire time. Season two is like, both sides agree for the most part that, things are a mess.
Yeah.
And, even Rhaenyra and Allison can be like, look, okay, we're on opposite sides, but can we both agree it's messed up right now? And like, neither of us want this.
I'm going to take your meal analogy and basically say the appetizer was great. The main course was fantastic. And then you got to the dessert. It was slow. It was like, it was gamey. It was very chewy. Kind of ruined the entire evening, to be fair. And then the waiter just like complained about the tip. The valet didn't like put a dent in my car. You know, it's just kind of like snowballed at the end of the evening. You know, overall, it was fine. I thought it was an okay season. I didn't hate any of it.
Yeah. Great recommendation there. I didn't hate any of it.
I didn't hate any of it.
I loved a lot in the first half. Episodes 2 and 4, love it. Fantastic television.
Some of the best. Some of the best television.
Even in the back half, there's a lot of great scenes. It's a lot of great dialogue scenes, a lot of great acting. There's a lot of great television in here. It's just too padded out. There are gems.
Yeah,
there are many, many gems. Anyway, that's been House of the Dragon Season 2, not Game of Thrones. We will talk about that one day on a leisure list, I'm sure. So, Ryan, well, where can we find you?
That's my quick question of the week. That's okay, my quick one. After this season of House of the Dragon, how much closer are you to watching Game of Thrones? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being like,
okay,
I ain't watch, it's not even in the thought process, with 10 is I'm watching it tomorrow.
I was just looking at my list of TV shows that I've got to get through, or going to get through at some point. Game of Thrones is coming up on the short list. I am just about to go back to Chuck season 4, and I finally finished Fire Walk With Me, as I discussed on one of the previous leisure lists. So I can finally go back and finish Twin Peaks, which I've been meaning to do forever. So once I finish season 3 of Twin Peaks, basically, I'll start Game of Thrones. It's going to take me a very, very long time to finish it, mind you, once I start a show. Sometimes it'll take me months, might even take me a year. I don't know. But I probably will start Game of Thrones within the next couple months at the rate I'm going. So that's your answer. It will be within the calendar year. I bet you by the end, probably by early spring at the very latest, we can have a leisure list where I discuss season 1.
Nice. Good to hear.
It is coming.
Winter is coming. Anyway, you can find me at Ryan
That's
Walker
been question
Bishel
of the week
on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at ThoughtPlane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe, where we discuss Fan Expo and Comic-Con and do's and don'ts and at conventions and whatnot. Just explain everything about what a Comic-Con is if you've never been to one. Till next time.
Take care. Team Black!